Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more. Want to be part of the show? Send us a message through our website, metalmayhemroc.com. Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
And now, welcome tonight's host, John the Vernomatic Verno.
Good evening, everybody. It's Sunday night, not Thursday night, and we have a special edition episode of Metal Mayhem ROC for you. Unfortunately, we're coming at you live tonight, Sunday night, because this past week we lost one of our own, and it's a big one. Legendary metal visionary Johnny Zazula, better known as Johnny Z, founder of Megaforce Records, instrumental in the development of that early thrash and metal movement. The guy that brought Metallica to the forefront, Testament, Overkill, Anthrax, passed away this past week, February 1st. I had a chance this afternoon to speak with Carl Kennedy, drummer of the Rods, friend of Johnny and Marsha Zazula for well over 40 years. And we had a long conversation. We had a chance to reflect on Johnny's contribution to metal, and more importantly, Johnny's contribution to the human race. Like I said, Carl and Johnny have been friends for years. They go way back to the 80s, and it's a great story. So what I wanted to do, do this special edition. I'm going to get this out for you right now. Tomorrow night, I have my live Metal Mayhem ROC live radio show on Metal Devastation Radio, and we're going to be playing tribute to Johnny throughout the show. Music from the bands that he signed, produced, and brought to superstardom, and just reflect and celebrate this man's life. So, unfortunately, I never had a chance to meet him, but I have felt his workings in the 45 plus years that I've been following metal. And like I said, he is his fingerprint on what we all love. So I wanted to do my part to get the word out there and show my respect. So let's get into our conversation in remembrance of Johnny Zazula with Carl Kennedy of the Rods. I'm the Vernomatic. This is Metal Mayhem ROC. Have a great week, folks. Well, we lost a true legend in the rock and metal community last week. Johnny Zazula, better known as Johnny Z, founder of Megaforce Records, has his fingerprint all over the thrash movement and the metal explosion of the early 80s. I have on the line an old friend of Johnny Z's, Carl Kennedy of the Rods. Carl, I'm sorry for the loss. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the condolences, but I think we all share that. I mean, Johnny and I were close friends, but I can't claim ownership to John because he had so many people who loved him, and it's a real loss. You know, the guy was a visionary, and he did so much for metal, and it's sad that he's gone.
Johnny lost his partner Marsha last year. She was the glue that kept them together during his exciting life. And Johnny also had three daughters, one with his first wife and two with his second wife, Marsha. So again, it goes deeper than just the metal community. So
absolutely. And you know, his family was with him. Johnny and I, in the last 4 years or so, you know, we talked two or three times a week, and we had some great talks, and we always laugh because Johnny, aside from his investments, he worked on Wall Street, and so he had a small account, and he would be a day trader. And he said, you know, if I can make a couple hundred a day, just did it for fun. Uh-huh. And so he would give me stock tips. And so I bought a few things that he recommended, and I would always bust him about, well, it's all right, John. He goes, well, don't buy it because I'm telling you this, you know, because I don't know what's going up or down. I go, no, you've guaranteed any losses you're covering. And so I would always bust him about the stock that, sure, no problem, you're going to cover all my losses if there are any. So if there's an upside, I win. If there's a downside, I don't lose. And, you know, but Johnny was, you know, he was at home, his family was there. And I know that Ricky Lee, he just had nothing but high praise, because when I would talk to John, and we, like I said, we talked regularly, it would usually be on speakerphone or FaceTime. And Ricky Lee was always there, but she took care of him to the very end. And, you know, his family was great, and they were there as well. But Ricky Lee was there every day. And so, you know, God bless him to Ricky Lee, because she was definitely somebody who was there by her father's side right to the end.
Now, Ricky Lee is one of the children that he had with Marcia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's quickly go back to the beginning. How did you meet Johnny Z? Explain that scenario and your professional relationship with him.
Right. It's hard to believe that we've been friends 40 years. I was recording at Music America with Chris Bubach, and Metallica had come in to record with Chris. And Chris was telling me about Johnny Z and that he was signing bands. And so I called Johnny, and we had a great talk. He knew of the Rods, and we had a great talk, and that's how it started. You know, that was as simple as a phone call. That Johnny and I hit it off from the first time we started speaking, and so that's how it went. From there, we just he started asking me about producing different bands, and so off we went. And I'd like to go back to about Marcia.
Sure.
What a great team they were. And Marcia was there. Marcia came in for Metal Rap. The Rods were doing a demo, and Johnny asked us if we could write something. So we came up with the music for Metal Rap for him. He had the words. But Marcia came in, and she directed the children's choir. She came in the next day, and she brought the kids, and she was fantastic. I mean, she was so great. Like, she was definitely a producer all the way. She kept everybody on track, on point, and got a great performance from the kids. But it was sad. I remember Johnny calling me the day Marcia died. I couldn't believe it when he said Marcia's gone. I was stunned. And it's you always wonder when you have such a close-knit team how long that partner is going to last after that half of them really goes, because they're part of the whole, and so they're in essence. And so I was shocked, you know, that Johnny was gone. And you know, shortly after Marcia, a year after Marcia had passed, but Marcia was wonderful, and he credits her with so much. She just was such a great lady, and she took good care of John.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, there's usually a strong woman behind an innovative man, the glue that keeps things together.
So, absolutely.
So without going too far deep into the weeds with Johnny's health, exactly what was the root of Johnny's passing?
You know, Johnny had been struggling with this affliction, and you know, I'll let the family speak to it.
Okay.
But it's been something that he's been battling, and it was something that was making it difficult for him to walk, and it became very painful. And he was having treatments sometimes 3 times a week. And we would talk to him sometimes during these treatments when he was up for it and was bored. He and I would talk, and we'd talk music and try to keep his mind off it. But these transfusions, treatments he was getting were like 8 hours long, and they would help for a while. And so we were really optimistic. But, you know, something that had been plaguing him for a while, and we thought he could get past it, and ultimately it didn't. He didn't. It was very sad.
The history of Megaforce in the beginnings has been well documented. Scott Ian chasing him down in pancake houses, Johnny getting the No Life to Leather tape and calling the Metallica guys from a payphone outside of his flea market record store. So you mentioned that you met Johnny while you were up here. Metallica was up here in Rochester, New York, recording Kill 'Em All. Did you know of John before then? Or was this was I realized this was this whole Megaforce was developing basically overnight. Really?
It absolutely was. It was a full tilt. And this is how I remember Johnny and always admire Johnny. Johnny had a way of, he moved forward. He was like P.T. Barnum. He moved forward and everything was sucked up in the wake because he was moving so fast. And that's, and that was what he, what was basically happening with Megaforce. And of course he wasn't here. Metallica wasn't up then when, I called Johnny. Metallica was coming in. So I actually didn't interact with Metallica during that time. We had played shows around it. And then my friend Victoria, who took care of the rods in the early days, and when Anthrax came, I suggested Victoria help us. You know, when we were poor and nothing, she would make these Quiznos type subs. And we were all like, oh my God, they're so great. And then she should have started at Quiznos in 1980. But she would make these hot, open face subs for us, and so she took care of the bands, and so that's how Rock and Roll Hotel started, was bringing in bands, and Johnny continued it. But you know, things went fast, and that was what it was. Chris Bubach telling me that John was coming in, and I called him, and then we didn't meet until after that. I think he came to Pyramid, and I met them then for the first time in person.
Last fall, we did a special episode on Metal Mayhem ROC. We did an interview with Andrew Robleski. Andrew was, at the time, a 21-year-old sound engineer student, and he was second chair engineer on that Kill 'Em All album. And seeing that he was the same age as the band, he became friends with them. Here's a fun story that Andrew shared about Johnny Z in the studio during the making of Kill 'Em All. How much time did you have to spend with these guys outside the studio?
Well, I was usually the person who would pick them up from the house on Boardman and bring them to the studio. The best part of spending time with these guys was one time Johnny Z was in town, and it was a Wednesday night. And, you know, we kind of were wrapping up early because these guys slept in, you know, because we would drink all night. And that's where the whole nickname Alcoholica came from, by the way.
Oh, sure.
So Johnny's like, you know, what's there to do? And I said, oh, I said, on Wednesday nights, I usually go to East Rochester because it's 25-cent beer night.
Where, Peachy's?
So I think it was called Miller's. It was right on Commercial Street on the main drag there. And so Johnny Z said, here's $100. He gave me $100 bill. He goes, go have some fun. We piled into my Chevy Impala and we went to Miller's, and a few of my buddies from Penfield were there, and I gave the bartender the $100 and I said, don't stop. And we had a couple beers.
Just this week, Andrew posted on his Facebook page a picture of never seen before photos that Andrew has in his personal collection of Johnny Z at the desk, at the board, at Music American. One of his daughters is in the picture. And he said Johnny was a good guy. He was, he didn't interact with him much, but.
You know, Johnny was a good guy. And Johnny would give, Johnny and Marcia put every dollar on the line. There was a time with Anthrax, and I have this, the composition books, the little black and white ones, where I paid Anthrax their per diems. Mm-hmm. And every day they would sign. And it's a funny book because I'll have to share it at some point. But it's funny because when it first starts out, it's like Scotty Ian and so on. Then it winds up Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, JFK. Mm-hmm. Like pretty soon they would sign for their per diems, like just ridiculous names. But I wound up fronting a few thousand dollars so Anthrax could eat because – they were tapped out. Like they had projects going and they had money in the pipeline, but they didn't have it in their pocket. And I know that John Perry Ellis fronted studio time. John and Alex Perry Ellis fronted studio time. I paid Anthrax per diems for extended period of time. And of course, Johnny made it right. Johnny and Marcia made it all right because he was really a good guy, but he would take a band out and spend his last dollar. and you know, to make sure the band was doing okay. He was just a really good guy, both of them, John and Marsha. They both sacrificed tremendously in the early days, and thank God they wound up reaping the benefits from the sacrifices and the vision.
He did that on many occasions. It started with the Metallica guys, but Testament, he brought around Overkill. He took a chance on a Freely's Comet, King's X. You know, he brought those.
And he pushed King's X. Really, they spent a lot of money on King's X.
You know, the Raven guys, those. What can you share about any of those, like the Freely Comets over the Overkill days? Or more importantly, you were there during the recording of the Spread Into Disease and Stormtroopers of Death. Did John have anything to do with that, or was that?
No, that was all. They were all signed to Megaforce, you know. The So all during that time, and, you know, I produced the first Overkill, and so Johnny was cool. Johnny and Marsha were always, they would come up when they could and hang out. They came up for Exciter when we were recording, and but they, you know, they had always, they would always show up and say whatever they could. I mean, they had other things going on, so it was tough for them to be away, but they would come up and spend a day.
What about your friendship with John outside of the music business? You know, do you ever vacation with him, or was it more of a telecommunication relationship after all the years? Tell us a little bit about Johnny the person.
John and Marsha, well, you know, when Johnny and Marsha, they were looking before they bought an oceanfront property. They came up here, and we spent a couple of days just driving around in the Poconos. I drove them to different places. They were looking at different lakes. There's so many lakes up here where I am in Scranton area, Poconos area. So we spent at least 2 or 3 days driving around and, you know, looking at houses. And, you know, so I would see them on occasion wherever, whenever possible. You know, we didn't really live close. So mostly we would just talk on the phone.
He eventually retired down to Florida. Did you ever see him down there or anything? Or
I didn't, and I regret and don't regret, because he'd been inviting me, and we were, I was in Florida, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years, and I was going to stop by, but it would just seem like it would be an imposition, so we didn't. And so then I planned on going right after Christmas to see him. So we had made plans that I was coming down, and he's like, no, please stay here. I'm like, no, John, I'm going to stay in a hotel. I don't want to impose. But then Kennedy Band got a gig on my birthday, January 27th. And so, like, I can't come now. I've got to rehearse every week. So I regret not going, because I planned on going the first part of January. I already had my ticket paid for, and but I just had to not go. And I thought, well, I'll go after. And of course, like so many things in life, you know, what happens while you're making plans, there is no after. So
perfect example where, don't want to sound cliche, but we really, especially in this pandemic period, you just really have to live your life to the fullest. You said you just celebrated your 69th birthday, and you're trending on the social network sites. There's an excellent video of you doing a drum solo in a concert recently. What was that gig? Was that a 450 gig? Was it a Kennedy gig? What was
it? It was a Kennedy gig, and it was our first full length gig. And by the way, I like the way you said it was my 69 birthday, you know, because that just makes it sound so much better than 69. Of course, when I was young, and you said, when I was like 13 or 14, and you said 69, like we'd all tee-hee and giggle and, you know, think I was so funny. And now when I say 69, I cry. But anyway, it was great to play on my birthday. It was a Kennedy gig, and it was, you know, it was just fun to do the Kennedy album. We did the entire album and 3 new songs we're working on for the next album. And it was well received, and it was fun to do. And, you know, I did it solo on my 69th birthday, which I guess is, I think about it in terms of some kind of milestone. I was able to at least play, and I had to hold back a little bit because I wasn't sure, you know, I've been playing a lot because of COVID, and I'm like, I've got a whole set to go through. And so I was trying to hold back, but it was, when I got done, it was like, I had just like walked around the block. It was nothing at all. So that was also great for me to know that I can get back out there and play comfortably what I want to play, the way I want to play it, and no, not taxing on me at all.
Last time we talked, the 450s had released their debut album. How are the 450 guys doing? How have things been in that camp?
things are going great. We have new videos coming out shortly, and kind of pulled back for January because everything is dead in January. But now we have a whole battery of things. Our publicists are gearing up for that. And we're talking about getting together for the next album sometime in the summer. So we'll see how that comes about. Awesome. But 450s are going strong in terms of that. And, you know, it's a really crappy time to release an album, middle of COVID, and can't play a gig, can't, you know, and if you set up a gig, how many gigs are set up and then canceled? So, but nonetheless, it has not daunted us in any way. We're not discouraged, and we're moving forward. I think I still love the album so much, and we get great people who hear the album really connect to it. So just a question of staying on it and getting people to listen to it and see if it connects with them.
And what about that other project you're involved with, The Rods? I know last time we talked, you guys were putting stuff together for that.
I have 3 drum tracks done. I think I have 6 more in my computer that I'll be chipping away at this week. And so we're making progress. The album is coming along quite nicely. I'm very excited about it because honestly, the last 2 albums, this last album, I thought, well, that might be the last Rods album. But now it looks like we will have this album, and I don't want to speak too soon, but maybe there'll be even another album.
Well, you know, Carl, you know, it's funny because as this pandemic has gone on and things develop, all the veteran bands are just pumping out stuff. Saxon just released that Carpe Diem the other day, and it's, you know, it's just some of their best stuff. It's just right out there. Overkill, mm-hmm. and some of these, and I hate to use legend bands, but they're still pumping it out. And why not? You know, you're a workaholic. You love what you do. You don't know anything else. Sure, you may have other side financial projects, but rock and roll's in your DNA. What are you going to do?
It absolutely is. And, you know, bands like Overkill, Anthrax, they haven't missed a beat, like in terms of day one to now. And Anthrax just had a video of Gung Ho. Mm-hmm. And I remember Gung Ho because when producing that album, they did that song and Charlie nailed it first take. And that was just mind blowing because at that point, who was playing double bass that fast? Nobody. It was mind blowing to hear him execute it so well, perfectly, one take. But if you listen to it, they're still the same. They haven't lost anything. No step backward. Joey sings better than ever. And the band's tighter than ever. And they all kick ass. And so Overkill the same. They've stayed solid the whole time. So even though these bands have added years, it certainly hasn't tainted anything. It hasn't, like, you're not hearing the swing slow version of Gung Ho. Gung Ho. Hey, Gung Ho. You know, that's not happening. It's still in your face, balls to the wall. So, you know, why not keep cranking out the music when you're playing at that level? And that for me was criteria when the Rods got back together like 14 years ago or whenever it was that if we're not playing, if we're like a reasonable facsimile of what we were, then thank you, but no thank you. I don't want to do it. So, you know, but I think if you can perform at a high level and write consistently like Saxon, look at the show they just had with Girl School and some other bands I can't think of.
Diamondhead and Uriah Heep.
Right. Phenomenal lineup. And, you know, Biff sounds great. And I know he's had some health issues, but you can do it, you know. And it's like my daughter, my daughter's fiance, we're all eating. And my daughter was eating and her head was kind of down as she was eating. And her fiance said to me, so when are you going to stop playing? And my daughter, without missing a beat, goes, never. I was like, I didn't even have to answer. It was like, she knows. I'm going to, you know, basically rock till you drop. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Like I said before, all these old bands, they're old friends. It's, mm-hmm. you just revisit. Nothing irks me more when someone says, oh, yeah, I used to like them. I go, well, you don't like them anymore? Well, you know, they're still putting out killer stuff. They're still, like I said, they're our old friends. And I consider, you know, the Rods part of your music part of old friends. That's
mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. I noticed that here in America, it seems that music has been forever since I was young. Something that's basically, you're told this is the new thing, the new it thing, quote unquote. and that's what you like now. In Europe, it's not that way. In Europe, it's like American country fans here. In Europe, metal fans, they find a band. That's it. They like that band. They don't dislike that band. They love that band till whenever, unless that band tries to take it too far left or right, where they're just completely out of what the genre was that they loved them for in the first place. But it's the way country fans are here. Country fans discover somebody and they like that artist or group, they stay with them. There's no, I used to like them. But in America, it seems that you do get some of that, where, oh, they're not the hippest new thing now. So, but,
you know,
the serious music fans definitely don't, they don't vacillate that way.
You know, recently we talked with Nigel Glockler of Saxon, and we were talking about those European festivals because we were discussing the touring plans. And Carl, I don't know if you've really seen these lineups that they have over in Europe, these festivals, and everyone plays them. But yet here in the States, there's some festivals, but there are the older bands that, you know, there's one member or there's offshoots, like, you know, there'll be a festival and no disrespect to any of these guys, but there'll be like two or three different versions of LA Guns playing this festival. And you never really know, you know, who they are.
That's right.
You know, but
you have a band name with like second generation, you know, they played with somebody who played in the original lineup or something.
Yeah.
And they're now calling it that. Yeah, no, we've played so many festivals in Europe and the lineups are incredible. And Europe is a whole different thing when it comes to how the fans view music and so on.
But those festivals are just jam packed with, you know, I'm looking at it and it's like Maiden headlines, but accepts there, Flotsam and Jetsam, Priest, the up and coming bands are all on there. And it's just like,
I likened it to a friend, and this isn't some kind of statistical research, but it was my observation from touring the States and knowing that places such as Texas, for example, would be a hotbed for metal, but Northeast, not so much. And, you know, the only thing I could explain to my friend is that in Europe, it's like, you know, five states in the US, right? It's a smaller area, even though you're talking Europe, thinking it's as big or bigger than the entire continental US.
Yeah.
So we have pockets of metal, but to pull it all together is a different story here. Whereas in Europe, it's pretty easy to go to a show from England. For example, we played Grass Pop and in Belgium, but we'd also had been to Download in England. And, you know, you're on a ferry and you're in Belgium. It's not a big deal to travel to all these countries. And so it's a different world. But here, if you're talking, you're in Pennsylvania or New York State, and you might go to a festival in Texas, it's a tough drive.
Yeah.
So because geographically we're so spread out, I think if you took all the metal fans in the U.S., we could and just could consolidate them into one area, we could probably have the same type of huge festivals they have in Europe. And the other thing is, I don't know the promoters here put on those kind of festivals, because I don't know if they have faith in putting on a lineup the way they do in Europe, that they will get the fans to pay. So, but whatever, it's just been my observation that because the U.S. is just so large that it makes it tougher to pull it all together.
And the landscape has changed, and, you know, metal and hard rock, it's down the list now as popular music. It's just changed. We missed the golden age when, you know, and things are good. All right. Well, Carl, again, thank you for sharing the insight on Johnny Z.
Hey, I think he leaves a big hole, but he leaves an amazing legacy that, you know, every time you listen to something metal, it really was a lot of it's evolved because of Johnny Z's efforts and Marsha's efforts in the beginning. So hats off to Johnny and Marsha.
Again, Carl's involved with his new band, the 450s, his solo band, Kennedy, and his day job, the Rods, the legendary Rods. So seek out Carl Kennedy on Facebook and the internet and gain information on all that. Again, Carl, thank you, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, John.
Okay, take care.
Metal for life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.